Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
And today we are doing a Dex We Play, and we are going to talk about a new deck that I've been brewing. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about some news. So, in terms of news, we have had one new set almost release as of the time of this recording, and we have another new set right on the horizon. The new set that is coming out on Friday, as of this week, is Modern Horizons 2, with the pre-release having happened last Friday, and next month we are seeing Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. Have either of you guys managed to get your hands on any of the cards from Modern Horizons?
I was lucky enough to be able to go to our local LGS and pick up two pre-release kits. I didn't get a lot of the staples I would want for Commander. I did get a fair amount of fetches and stuff. That was really cool. And the Esper Sentinel, so I did pick up one of those. So out of everything I got for the decks I play, Esper Sentinel is probably the big pickup.
Very nice. Jake, have you had any luck yet?
Not yet. I'm actually going to try to not buy sealed product for this set and just buy a couple singles in about a week or two when the prices are hopefully a little lower. Yeah,
this set is supposed to be printed to demand, essentially, so as long as distributors keep buying it from Wizards, Wizards will keep printing it. So hopefully we'll see prices come down on things in the next few weeks. I managed to get a very lucky pre-release kit. I didn't open any fetches, but I did get the new green-black Planeswalker, who is also an insect Grist. I managed to get the new monkey, who is also a pirate Raghavan. I managed to get the new cleric, who is also a Rest in Peace, the Sanctifier and Vec. So I feel like I did pretty well overall, and I almost got to test one of the new cards yesterday, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. We also saw some previews from the new Adventures in the Forgotten Realms set. We now, in addition, fulfilling my wish for strange D&D monsters making their way into Magic, we have a Flumph, and fulfilling the wish for weird D&D spells being printed into Magic, we have Tasha's Hideous Laughter.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing more of these. This is an IP that I am very eager to see in Magic form.
It definitely has the background for it. Like, I think if done right, it'll fit very, very well.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that may not fit super well, depending on which part of the community you sit in, is the newly announced Secret Lair, Stranger Things. So for anyone who's not familiar, Stranger Things is a Netflix series set in the 1980s, kind of heavily delving into nostalgia, with a bunch of kids who try to solve supernatural problems. And Wizards of the Coast has announced that there will be mechanically unique black border cards coming out in this secret lair. But they've also announced that they will be printing Magic-themed versions of this 6 months later onto the list.
And fitting in with most references that Wizards of the Coast makes, this is about 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little dated, but whatever. It's what they're doing now. I think getting upset about it is a waste of energy on my part, so I'm just not going to.
You sound defeated.
Yeah, well, I've recently decided to embrace the proxy lifestyle in a lot of ways, and if they make, like, an 11 card that is really good that I want to play, but I don't want to play 11, I'll just turn it into a, I don't know, zombie wizard or something.
There you go.
I think that it kills a lot of the fantasy and thematic for me, because Magic has all this amazing art and amazing, like, story behind it. And then you think, like, The Walking Dead, like, oh, here are these random peoples from this TV show that people do or do not actually care about anymore. So it'd be nice if they actually, when they come with the Stranger Things one, if, you know, later on down the road they include those cards on the list. It'd be really cool if they did Magic variants of the ones from The Walking Dead as well.
Well, that's exactly what I said they're doing with Stranger Things. They're going to be releasing a set of Magic-themed version of them, essentially reskinned into Magic characters in the list.
I want them to do that retroactively for The Walking Dead as well.
I think they've already said they do not plan on doing it for The Walking Dead at this time. Yep. But we can hope. If this is a successful plan, then fingers crossed. Anyway, outside of Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro, we have some, well, actually, technically, this is now inside of Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro. Spelltable was bought by Wizards a few months ago, and now they have matchmaking in beta. I know, Alex, you probably play more online gaming than I do at the moment, and you've probably dealt with more online matchmaking. Is this a big deal for Wizards and for Spelltable in general?
I mean, historically, since it is Wizards, their matchmaking can leave a bit to be desired, depending on who you ask. Both Magic Online and Arena do have in the past had matchmaking issues. Big thing with that is, like, the entire card databases that exist with them exist, so there are algorithms that they can use. I'm not entirely sure how spell table is going to recognize or match equal level people together. So it'll be interesting to see how or what Wizards does to kind of work around that.
Well, at the moment, spell table doesn't gather any data from games. So it doesn't know if you've been on a winning streak, a losing streak. It doesn't know what deck you're playing. So I'm not sure how it plans to do it either. It may just be, hey, these three other people want to play Magic. Why don't you go play Magic with them?
Yeah, I have not been keeping up with this, so I actually did not know about it until right before this episode. Is it actual matchmaking with like MMR type of implementation somehow, or is it more of like open lobbies where people can just post their games and then people can join like old school all-seeing eye from GameSpy? This is like freaking
I think it's much stuff. I think it's much closer to the latter than the former at the moment. I'll post the details in the description of this episode.
Well, if that's the case, it'll still really facilitate easier games. That way you don't have to go to an outside place like a Discord and coordinate everything, yeah. Get it all set up. You can just go to Spell Table to play Spell Table, which
yeah. And it
I'm
looks
sure
like
a lot
it,
of people will do.
It looks like it is just a lobby system at the moment. I logged on to Spell Table and it showed me that there are currently six Commander games with 0 out of 4 players in the pod and just open to join. And then there are a couple of sealed events that people are playing, and someone is waiting to play Modern.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
My only concern with that is now that Magic or Wizards owns it, they're going to hopefully not, but probably try and find some way to use it as a free way to gather information and resource data for whatever it is they have planned marketing-wise or product-wise going forward, because who doesn't like a free way of gathering information?
Well, I don't really know how they're going to gather too much information from the grainy webcam footage that we post, but...
There was a quote from LSV a while ago, something along the lines of, if you're getting a product for free, then you are the product. So, yeah, I mean, that's just how life works these days.
All fair. Well, why don't we move from the grim, dark future of big data over to something a little bit more hopeful, that we've had some really sweet Major League Commander for the first now 6 weeks as of the time this video is going up. And it has been really cool to watch. So looking at the current standings for the East and the West, it looks like at the moment we have, in the Western Conference, we have LJ leading, who is currently 4-0, and in the Eastern Conference, Comedian MTG is leading with a record of 3-1. You guys have been watching a lot of this, right? This has just been awesome.
I really love this. I'm so grateful for the Mind Sculptors and everybody involved in this to put it on. It's great to be able to see so many games of CDH played by good players with good decks, and I don't know, it's highly entertaining. You get a couple long, grindy sessions that probably weren't intended to be grindy. There's been turn one on the play wins, which is just fantastic to watch. And it's kind of, you know, the highlight of CEDH is being able to win before anybody else gets to draw a card. You just kind of get that pumped up feeling.
And you also get to enjoy just the classic Commander punt now and again, where someone just goes for it and makes a simple miscalculation and is off by one mana, or they realize that their line is going to be interrupted when they remove a piece of stacks that they had to put out to go for the win, and...
Ooh, too soon, John. Too soon.
It kind of captures everything I love about Commander and everything I love about CDH in specific. And just big props to Callahan and the rest of the Mind Sculptors and the entire Major League Commander group for putting this on. This is awesome.
I enjoy the rewatchability of it. Like, you know, if I go a couple of days without being able to watch it, I can come home, open YouTube on my phone, and get caught up on games. So it's a consistent flow of new content for a format that I'm interested in, which is actually really cool.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of games, have you guys managed to get any games in since last we all talked together? Jake, I know you've been busy with moving and filling up a new house, and got any games in, buddy?
So the good news is I found my webcam.
All right.
And there are 2 LGSs near me that I will hopefully at some point in the near future be able to frequent. But to answer your question, no, I have not had a chance to actually play any Magic.
Alex, you've, I know, been on the road a lot for work recently. You were, for a little while, the only person on your team at work who was vaccinated.
I'm no longer the only person, but I'm still the only one traveling.
So. Have you managed to get any games in?
No, I have not. Not of Commander, anyways. I mean, there's always Brawl on Arena to scratch that itch, but no, as far as Commanders, not since the last time I played with you guys.
Yeah, the only games I've managed to get in, I've got a few more games with my Malcolm and Kettis deck that I've been tuning. No wins on the last two games, but still very enjoyable games overall. It's going in a direction I'm really enjoying with it. I just need to learn to mulligan better for the deck.
I've been chilling your deck in a couple different Discords. I've seen people ask about Malcolm Kettis brews. I'm like, hey, I know somebody who's got one of those, and here's a really nice detailed primer.
Well, I'm going to try to submit it to the CDH decklist database today, actually.
Oh, nice. I'm rooting for you. I will shill that as well.
Sounds good. Well, speaking of new things, why don't we talk about this new deck that I've been working on? I buried the lead a little bit, but this deck is going to be a partnership of Tevish Zot, Doom of Fools, and Tormod the Desecrator. So the genesis of this deck, guys, was I built originally a Sir Conrad the Grim deck. I really enjoyed it as my mono black deck, but it was in a really weird place where I didn't get to play it very much. There were times when we could not get a full pod of four players together, and in three-player pods or one-on-one, that deck is extremely weak. Jake, you might remember that when we saw each other, I played the deck a few times against you and was on the verge of taking it apart then and there, but you encouraged me, no, see how it'll play in a full four-player pod, I'll bet it'll make a difference. It definitely did. To the point where, against more casual players and newer players, it honestly felt a little bit oppressive when the combo piece is in the command zone. It felt oftentimes like they would have difficulty feeling overwhelmed, struggling against having that combo piece to deal with when it was coming down from the command zone. I also have wanted to brew with Tevish Zot in a low-color deck for a long time. Jake, we've discussed Tevish Zot how many hundreds of times?
I think you could say we've discussed Tevish Zot ad nauseum. No?
I'm going to leave that entire pause in there.
I move that we cut that from the episode.
Nope, all of this is staying in.
All right.
I landed on Tevish Zot in a low-color deck and decided that the idea of trying to partner him with a mono-black partner would be a good way to approach it. I decided of ultimately on using Tormod with Tormod the Desecrator, another partner from Commander Legends. So let me read these two commanders. Tevish Zot, Doom of Fools, is 4 and a black for a 4 loyalty legendary planeswalker Zot. The +2 ability is create 2 0/1 black thrall creature tokens. +1 ability, you may sacrifice another creature or planeswalker. If you do, draw 2 cards. Then, draw another card if the sacrifice permanent was a commander. Then the ultimate is -10, gain control of all commanders, put all commanders from the command zone onto the battlefield under your control. Then, with the static abilities, Tevish Zot, Doom of Fools can be your commander and partner. Tormod the Desecrator is 3 and a black for a 4/2 legendary creature zombie wizard with partner. With the triggered ability, whenever one or more cards leaves your graveyard, create a tapped 2/2 black zombie creature token. My whole goal here was I can keep making zombie tokens to feed to Tevish and to draw more cards that way. And I like drawing cards. It seemed like a way that I would always be doing something in a game when, at lower power levels, you don't always expect to see a big influx of cards and the ability to interact a lot. My main goal with the deck was to use the commanders as value engines, with Tevish trading my tokens and any disposable creatures I'm running in the deck for 2 extra cards per turn, meaning that in essence, I'm drawing cards at parity with a full 3-person pod. I could also theoretically use Tormod to build up an army of zombie tokens and cycle creatures in and out of the graveyard to make the Zac fodder, but also potentially use those zombie tokens as a win condition long term. Importantly, rules notes, Tormod also triggers off of keywords like Dredge, Flashback, and Delve, so that's a direction I looked in a little bit while I was building the deck. My goal was to get a lot of creatures crawling in and out of the graveyard over and over, and that led me to start looking at one of the possible hidden commanders for the deck, and one of the creatures I'm building around a lot in the current build. And that is Hakon, Stromgald Scourge. This is 1 black-black for a 3/3 legendary creature zombie knight. You may play Hakon, Stromgald Scourge from your graveyard, but not from anywhere else. As long as Hakon is in play, you may play knight cards from your graveyard. And when Hakon is put into a graveyard from play, you lose 2 life. Hakon has always been a pet card, who I have been looking for ways to play and excuses to play. I had him as a backup plan in my Sir Conrad deck because Sir Conrad happens to be a knight. So a few days ago, I pitched the idea to Jake, hey, you know, are there enough good knights in black? To which Jake said, didn't you already have a Sir Conrad deck? So thanks to Hackon, I'm running a Knights Tribal Practice with a core of reusable creatures in the deck. Throne of Eldraine was pretty nice because it kind of gives access to a few black knights who have some additional effects, being that they are also adventures. Now, important rules note, you cannot cast an adventure card from the graveyard, even if the adventure is printed on a knight card. Hackon allows you to cast knight spells, not instants or adventures or sorceries. So the game will check when you actually have the card on the stack, and if it sees that it is not a knight on the stack, then you rewind the game to before you tried to illegally cast the spell. Changelings, on the other hand, are perfectly reasonable. So if a card has changeling, it has all creature types, and there are some interesting cards out there like Nameless Inversion, one in a black for a tribal instant shapeshifter with changeling. So it is a knight in the graveyard and on the stack. Target creature gets +3/-3 and loses all creature types until end of turn. Also lets me access things like Graveshifter, 3 in a black for a 2/2 creature shapeshifter with changeling, and it is otherwise just Gravedigger. When it enters the battlefield, you may return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand, essentially giving me a few extra ways to get extra zombie tokens. So that's the rough idea of the core of the deck.
You built a tribal deck, and that makes me so proud and happy on the inside.
I'm glad I could live up to your expectations, Alex.
Well, hopefully my new brew will live up to yours.
I like the synergy with the changelings, especially because it's kind of like a dual tribal deck. You've got knight stuff going on and zombie stuff going on, and this lets you double dip on that.
I'm not sure exactly what the correct direction to take it is in either. I'm not sure if it wants to be more of a zombie deck or with a little bit of knight stuff going on, or more of a knight stuff with zombie stuff going on. I'm not sure if it should even really be a heavy tribal deck, or just use the tribal stuff for value to try to then support more of a mono-black control win condition. Let me talk a little bit more, I guess, about how the deck plays. The main goal of the deck is just to have consistency in the form of a small number of black tutors like Buried Alive and Entomb to put Hakon Stromgold Scourge into the graveyard, and thus enable the knights for days to both feed Tormod's hunger for creatures, to get those triggers going to make more zombie tokens, and to feed Tevish Zot's appetite for sack fodder. It's definitely going to be more of a value deck, so I'm not going to be breaking any land speed records with this deck. I want to grind out value off of drawing cards from Tevish Zot, having lots of bodies to block incoming attackers, and keep Tevish Zot safe. I do plan to keep the curve somewhat low. It's probably going to wind up just below 3.0 overall, ideally so that way I can trigger Tormod several times each turn, and thus have more sack fodder for Tevish Zot and more ways to protect Zot as well. The consistency I want with the deck is basically going to end with getting Hakon into the graveyard and then just grinding value off of Tevish Zot himself.
I mean, I know you sent the primer out. I intentionally didn't read it beforehand because I kind of want to learn this all as we go. And I was curious looking at the list. I'm just like, there's some curious knight inclusions here, and I wasn't seeing it. But now that you've gone through it, and you know, it's on me for not reading it, I wanted to learn as we go, so to speak. I really like the interaction with Hakon and what the rest of the deck is doing as a secret commander, which I know is one of your big things when deck building is, here are my commanders, but realistically, this is my commander. It's over here in the corner being all obscure and whatnot. Very flavorful. I like the interaction. I think it's really cool.
Thank you very much. Where I'm struggling at the moment is how the deck is going to try to win. With my early draft, this deck is really all over the place in terms of win conditions. I think Sir Conrad triggers are probably the strongest approach, but I took apart the Sir Conrad deck for a reason. I think it's a little bit less painful with it not being in the command zone. I think it's a little bit more approachable for people to disrupt at more casual tables. He is a knight, which synergizes with Hakon, so I will get extra attempts if someone takes out my Sir Conrad. But this makes me think, then, do I then lean more heavily into aristocrats as the approach to just death by 1,000 paper cuts my opponents? I'm also going to be able to make lots and lots of zombie tokens off of the back of Tormod. Knight lords are pretty underwhelming, especially in mono black, but there are a few zombie lords which will buff my tokens very well while also synergizing directly with what Tormod wants to do, moving creatures into and out of the graveyard. So Jake, as you noted, I do kind of have that tension between those two tribes, and I'm not sure which way to wind up leaning with it. Like, I've got Lord of the Undead. It is a 2/2 for one black-black, a creature zombie lord. Other zombies get +1/+1, and for one and a black tap, return target zombie card from your graveyard to your hand, which would, incidentally, trigger Tormod. I'd also given a little bit of thought to this potentially just going into a mono-black control direction and trying to win off of classic finishers like Rain of Hailfire or Exsanguinate, just big black mana and do big black mana things. I'm just not sure which way to go, so I'm going to turn the question now over to my co-hosts. How can I tune this deck up? Which directions should I take it in? Do I lean into Sir Conrad's Knightly Aristocrats? Do I lean into the Zombie Horde? Big black mana? Guys, help me out here.
So I don't know if you remember, and it was an entirely different kind of style deck, but I had a knight deck at one point in time as well. I think I actually played against you and Jake when Jake was down for it. I already think that as an offshoot, what you have here is better than that deck ever was because of the more synergistic pieces that go with it. Zombies overall, I think, probably would be stronger, but just the aristocratic feel of, you know, 1,000 paper cuts, like, calls to me. So I kind of want to see how far we can go in that direction.
Okay. Jake, what do you think here? Which direction should I lean with this deck?
I think you should focus primarily on what role you want this deck to fill. Is this one of your lower power decks that you bust out against people new to the format? If that's the case, maybe lean more toward the zombie token route.
Okay.
That way it's not as, like, out of nowhere game ending, and it's a little more straightforward, gives players an opportunity to interact with you a little bit more.
Okay.
And if you wanted to push the deck, I do think that a Conrad style aristocrats deck would be stronger, but if that's not the purpose of the deck, that might not be where you want to take it.
All right. Maybe just leave Conrad in as the only quote-unquote aristocrat.
Yeah, just have him in there as part of the double edge synergy that you've got going on.
Okay, that could certainly work. So what kind of cards or what kind of other options can we look at to potentially tune this deck in that direction in that case?
For me, if you go toward the zombie token route, I did mention this to you prior, but I think you should find a spot for Tombstone Stairwell in this deck. It is a world enchantment from Mirage. It is 2 generic and 2 black. It has cumulative upkeep for a generic and a black, which is pretty steep, but at the beginning of each upkeep, if Tombstone Stairwell is on the battlefield, each player creates a 2/2 black zombie creature token with haste named Tombspawn for each creature card in their graveyard. At the beginning of each end step, or when Tombstone Stairwell leaves the battlefield, destroy all tokens created with Tombstone Stairwell. They can't be regenerated. And as a side note, this is part of their reserved list, so it is only ever going to get more expensive, and it is currently at about $18.
I had one of these once upon a time. I sold it for like 20 cents.
So this
magic.
Yeah. So your deck is focused about dumping creatures in the graveyard and getting value out of creature tokens or zombie tokens in specific. And this does both of those. Does create tokens for opponents as well, but you can probably find ways to capitalize off of those.
I like it. I'm going to have to see if I can find a copy of this card in that case.
Rolling on that note, if the zombie horde is going to be something that we go with, making sure they connect and able to go and do things. So if I would make a suggestion, one of my favorites, and it lives in Markov, is Cover of Darkness. Cover of Darkness is a 2-mana enchantment, 1 and a black. Cover of Darkness comes into play, choose a creature type. In this case, it'd be zombies for you. Creatures of the chosen type have fear. They can't be blocked except by artifact creatures and or black creatures.
It would certainly add some pretty nice evasion for the deck.
There's a similar effect you could get with, what set was this? War of the Spark, Vizier of the Scorpion. There were a couple of cards that focused on a mass in that set. So Vizier of the Scorpion is 2 generic and a black for a 1/1 zombie wizard. And when it enters the battlefield, you amass 1, which basically means you put a +1/+1 counter on an army you control. And if you don't have one, you create a 0/0 black zombie army token, and then you put the counter on it. But the big thing is that all your zombie tokens have death touch.
That's pretty sweet.
So that's kind of a form of evasion, because nobody really wants to trade off, like, you know, an actual creature for a 1-1 or 2-2 zombie token. But it also would let you play defense a little bit. And when it comes into play, it'll create two zombie bodies for you to do stuff with.
I dig that. I think, also looking at the price tag of Cover of Darkness at the moment, Vizier of the Scorpion, yeah, I'm liking that one.
Yeah, this is just like a bulk uncommon, so
yeah, exactly. That's helpful. And I don't mind being just a little bit less efficient for one extra generic mana to potentially get offensive and defensive buffs.
I'm going to throw out one more pet card. So if you have lots of disposable creature tokens that you would like to turn into value, there is a certain Yawgmoth Thran Physician who would greatly appreciate using those. That's two generic and two black for a legendary creature human cleric. With protection from humans, you have an ability of pay one life, sacrifice another creature to put a -1/-1 counter on one target creature and draw a card, and then the option to pay black and discard a card to proliferate. So this would obviously allow you to turn all your zombie tokens into card draw and removal, and just in case Hakon gets stuck in your hand, you can always discard and proliferate, and if you have some random counters out, like on your zombie armies, or -1/-1 counters on your opponents, you can pop those up.
That is a pretty cool suggestion. Not gonna lie, one of my thoughts while I was looking over the deck list the other night was, you know, maybe I should just like go through and try to remove everything that's not a zombie or a knight from the deck and really try to lean into that theme if the deck is starting to get away from me a little bit. I really do love Yawgmoth. I'm not sure if I'm gonna get another copy of him at the moment, though. But you're right, he would fit really well into the current deck list.
One of the pet cards I have that I use in my elf decks when I have them, I think it might be more aimed towards them because of the whole mana generating capability, but it's a legendary artifact, Throne of the God Pharaoh. It's a 2-mana artifact, and so at the beginning of your end step, each opponent loses life equal to the number of tapped creatures you control. So it's a good way that if you've got a mass tokens and you got one vulnerable opponent, you can swing out them, and then at the end of your end phase, each opponent loses life equal to whatever it is you attacked with, essentially your tapped creatures. In the elf decks, it just means I tap for mana, I use them to cast spells, and then as a side, I'm also dealing damage with it. But if you've got cards that say, hey, you know, you've got fear, you're able to get through to some players, not others, this is a way to kind of spread around damage by attack. Not one of the strongest cards, but I've always liked it, and I try and find room for it when I can.
There's some cute synergy there, too, with a lot of the zombie tokens recently making the zombie token generators produce zombies that come into play tapped. To kind of play up the whole slow zombie horde, this would actually, in a really weird way, kind of effectively give them haste-ish to attack.
Oh, I almost have to include it for that. That is hilarious. Oh, that's awesome.
In a line kind of similar to other episodes, the Lessons from CEDH, there is a card that is played in a lot of Underworld Breach decks because it can fuel your Underworld Breach lines. And in here, it could also find a place. It is Stitcher's Supplier. It is 1 black mana for a zombie, 1/1. When it enters the battlefield or dies, you put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard. So it's really straightforward, really simple, low mana cost, so you can get it out early, and it will feed your graveyard twice, both when it comes in and when either you chump with it or feed it to Tevish Zahat or something, so you can get effectively 7 cards added to your graveyard for this one body.
I'm not sure how that's not already in the deck.
Also, it's a zombie.
I like everything about that.
If you like discard outlets that are also zombies, can I introduce you to our friend Putrid Imp? It is a zombie imp for 1 black mana. It's a 1/1. It has the activated ability, discard a card. Putrid Imp gains flying until end of turn.
That's a zombie? Threshold. I did not know that was a zombie.
Yes, I figured that out when I was messing around with the Scarab God shadow bag. Because I was looking for random zombies with upside and looking for discard outlets. I'm like, oh, hey, this is both of those. So, you know, maybe that has some potential use. Because it's, again, a really cheap card that can help fill your graveyard.
Okay.
There's a card that I put in like all of my black decks that I brew and then always wind up cutting. So that'll probably happen here too. Priest of the Forgotten Gods.
I was gonna say it before you even said it. Like, as soon as you leaned into it, I'm like, oh, here comes our obligatory Priest of the Forgotten Gods conversation with a black deck.
Yeah, I don't know. I always put this in a deck, and then it's always one of the ones I cut. So it's a one generic in black for a 1/2 human cleric. So it is neither a zombie nor a knight, so I don't know if it'll fit the criteria. But it has an activated ability of tap and sacrifice two other creatures. Any number of target players each lose 2 life and sacrifice a creature, you add black, black, and draw a card. So it's like a bad form of Tevish Zot, but also has some other upside. I don't know. Maybe.
It is seeing play in the moment in my Aura deck, and it has done some work in there. You'll be pleased to know. But that's where it's a cleric and can have all those wonderful tribal synergies on that side. It may get a look at here at some point if I decide to slim down the mana curve a little bit more, but yeah.
There's another one that I have messed around with in the past, Crypt Breaker. It is 1 black mana for a zombie 1/1. It has 2 activated abilities. The first is 1 generic black, tap and discard a card to put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. So this is another discard outlet and token generator. And then the last one is tap 3 untapped zombies you control, you draw a card and lose 1 life.
This came out in the Return to Shadows, the Return to Innistrad sets, right? Yes, this was Eldritch Moon.
Eldritch Moon.
And I think there was one that came out, like a legendary or mythic zombie in Shadows over Innistrad that I always think is this card and then get disappointed when I look at it. So I think I completely forgot that this card was a thing. This is awesome. I gotta try this.
Okay, I think that's all I had offhand.
So it sounds like there's a bigger argument for going for the zombie horde, as much as I enjoy the aristocratic sense of it. But yeah, the zombies definitely do have a bit more going for it. They've got a bit more oomph. And you can still use Sir Conrad as the tie that binds.
I definitely can, and I think there is still enough of an argument for the little bit of the Knights package just for some additional value coming out of it. I may wind up cutting some of the more slow and unimpressive Knights at some point to make room for some of this, but I've got some cool stuff to work with here. Guys, thank you very much for helping me with my new brew.
I look forward to eventually playing against it.
We are definitely...
And dying to a zombie horde.
I look forward to losing to it, as happens whenever I play against John.
Alex, you have beat me so many times in our last face-to-face game.
I have with our like standard, hey, these are what to expect from decks, but any of your home brews that you make yourself always come out of, it's like a boomerang. It's like, I think I know where it's coming from, and all of a sudden it's whacking me upside the head with some ridiculous shenanigans.
Thank you very much, but at the same time, I've been Omnath stomped into the ground and Akiri beat in the face quite a few times recently.
Yeah, but there's nothing unique about that. It's like you sit down at a table, someone sits down at a table, they pull out a Rakdos, and it's like, oh, here's an Eldrazi deck. And anyone that knows John's like, that's not an Eldrazi deck, that's a Scrap Trawler deck. And then people...
Or, hi, let me play Galta against you. Oh yes, by the way, this is Storm.
So you take expectations and turn them on their head and then beat people with them, which is amazing. It speaks to your ability as a player and a deck builder, which is why I know this is zombies. I can handle this until I get beaten sideways with them.
Well, guys, thank you very much for your help today with tuning up this little deck while I try to build it to something that's going to be more appropriate for more tables. And I think that brings us towards the end of the episode, which means it is time for our hot seat.
You mentioned it earlier, and this came when it was brought about, we do have Secret Lair Stranger Things coming along. And if it's anything like The Walking Dead, you're going to see characters from the show make their way onto cards. So of the characters there, David Harbour's character is my favorite on the show, and I don't want to spoil too much. But what color identities do you think these characters may or may not be awarded when they do make their way to cards?
I haven't watched the show now in a year and a half since the last season came out. I actually have to look at the list of characters. So I'm going to Internet Movie Database.
So this may be entirely based on the fact that David Harbour is in the new Black Widow movie as essentially the Russian Captain America.
Okay.
All dressed in red. So I kind of want to say that he would actually be some variation of... I'd say he'd almost be Boros. If it were me.
That's kind of fit in with a lot of the... Not quite noir, but like the original Ravnica book series Wasn't that what the main character, the protagonist, was? He was one of the Boros detectives, essentially?
Yeah, Argus Woe. Yeah, so yeah. He was a... I'm a good guy, but I also have a bit of a temper, and I tend to fly off the handle and use my sword a lot.
That fits pretty well there.
I think that would be Hopper.
Okay, and then... let's see here. Winona Ryder's character kind of goes pretty crazy in season one for understandable reasons.
So you're thinking Rakdos, maybe?
She never really does anything overtly harmful to anybody, though.
For that madness of delirium, though. So maybe Blueback, maybe Dimir.
I could see that. I'd like to see just a delirium or madness printed on the card. That would just be funny. Probably not particularly sensitive, but... what do you think about... I think some of the interesting color identities are less in the main cast of the kids, and probably a little bit more in the supporting cast of, like, the teenagers and the adults in the story. Like, in the first season, there was that really interesting three-way conflict between... oh, I forget the characters' names. The photographer, Jonathan?
Yeah, Jonathan.
Nancy. And
Steve.
Yes, yeah, Steve.
So there's a lot there you can unpack. My biggest thing is Will better be a dual face card. He better be Will on one side and the Demogorgon on the other. That's all I'm saying. That has to happen.
You have a lot of demands of sets recently, Alex. Jake, so, did we just spoil the entire series for you?
No, I've seen it.
Spoiler tag?
Two seasons.
Listen, you literally have a character who is in the Upside Down. And in his place is now this monster running amok through Hawkins, Indiana. If that doesn't scream, please make me a dual face card, I don't know what does.
All right, that's reasonable. And they've pretty much proven at this point that they will go to modal double face cards whenever they feel like at this point.
Oh, I'll bet that Hawkins, Indiana is a lands card, and it just flips into the Upside Down.
That would actually be a really cool way to handle it.
It would.
Yeah, that would be kind of neat.
All right, guys, so that'll bring us to the end of the hot seat, and that'll bring us to the end of the episode. If you guys like this, be sure to like and subscribe on YouTube. You can hit us up on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMineMTG. Alex and Jake, you guys are on Twitter right now, too. Where can people find you at?
I had to look up my handle because I'm not very good at this. I am Necropotency, at Necropotency on Twitter.
It's at Gemstone_Alex.
You can also reach us at Gmail. We're gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Guys, thanks for joining me again. I've missed you over the past few weeks as the world has been slowly starting to get back to normal, and I hope we get to get some games in again soon.
Here's hoping.
Indeed.
Until next time, I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG or send us an email at gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.